Okay, whenever you're ready.
All right. Good morning again. And let's get started with roll, Jamie.
Commissioner Briseño.
Present.
Commissioner Buck. Commissioner Dobie. Commissioner Dobie, you're muted.
Sorry, I got two screens. You know, these two screens get me every time. I'm hearing.
And Commissioner Faruqi, we know is absent. Commissioner Kent.
Yes.
Commissioner Leach.
Present.
Commissioner Lee.
Here.
Commissioner Matsuba.
Present.
Commissioner O'Neill. Commissioner Steinberg.
Here.
And Commissioner Wang.
Here.
Okay, we do have a quorum.
Great. All right, moving to our next item, please. Our
first next item is opening quote reflection, and I believe that was Dr. O'Neill today. Yes.
Oh. Let's see.
Chairman Matsuba?
Yes.
I will take it if Dr. O'Neill will do mine next month.
Oh, all right, all right.
That helps you out any.
Yeah, that will help out. That'd be great, okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I wanted to share with all of you and our dear friend here and co-commissioner Otto was part of this event. I had the privilege last month of producing a film called The Longest Night Candlelight Vigil, which I think I kind of told you about earlier. And I shared then, I believe, the fact that around 400 Orange County citizens, homeless citizens, were lost to us last year. That number is the highest that has been recorded since they began recording homeless deaths on the streets of Orange County. And part of the service is a very intentional effort to bring interfaith faith leaders together, to have both sacred and secular music, and to make it a very broad width type of service and inclusive for everyone. But one of the things that I was struck by as we did the film and as we kind of came out of it on the other side, as it were, and we were going into Christmas. Our Jewish friends were just coming out of Hanukkah and kind of moving also into a new year, is the importance of light and how in the darkness of winter, so many of our neighbors are on the streets without care, without shelter, without enough food, without appropriate health care. And I ended the film by saying that it's up to us to illuminate these problems and to go into those dark corners where so many of them are struggling to survive. But I want to share with you today a quote that I used from the young poet Amanda Gorman, who many of us were introduced to when she spoke at President Biden's inauguration. And she wrote, "For there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we are brave enough to be it." And I feel like that maybe that's a good quote to start off the year on, that as we pursue what we are trying to do in ending hatred in Orange County, that we do have to be the light and we have to shine those lights on how dark some of that hatred can be. So I just wanted to share that with all of you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dot. That was a wonderful way to start this year and start our meeting for today. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. All right, our next item.
Item number three is monthly summary of commission activities.
Hi, Dr. O'Neill. Okay, that would be, Jennifer is going to stand in for Fareed on this one?
Joanne, I'm trying to, I'm having internet issues actually. That's why I've been off camera. I'm trying to figure it out. Okay. Could you actually give the update?
No. Norma, could you give that update for me, please?
I knew this was coming. I'm prepared.
We were ready. We were ready. I had a backup.
Good morning, everybody. December was a crazy, crazy month. Usually things are winding down, and this year was very different. There's several different projects and just different things, but luckily there was some good news that came our way. And it's not here. It's not in our monthly report, but I will give a more expansive update on this. But most of you know that the commission proposal was approved last month for $4 million. So I want to thank and congratulate the ad hoc committee that really spearheaded this. I want to thank also Renee and her staff for really kind of handling and supporting us through the process. It was arduous work, but I think the real work starts now. this is where we want it to be. So we're really excited. And like I said, I'll have more details. So everybody's informed about what this means and what this looks like later in the during the meeting. So as you could imagine, as we heard that this contract was approved, I quickly started moving and talking to different organizations and different folks because there are partnerships that we need to start building and introducing to for this to work. So a lot of that happened during the month of December. And then there was a presentation that my colleagues were a part of also where they offered a hate crimes presentation and a bystander intervention workshop for 40 plus high school students at OCCE. So that's sort of a December in a nutshell.
That's great. I love hearing about that group of students. That's beautiful. And thank you, Norma. You did it better than I could have even attempted to do. So I appreciate that for you stepping up for that. All right, our next item. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, our next item is a forum. So if anybody wishes to speak, if you could hit star 9 on your phone or the hand raise icon on the Zoom app, and you will have 3 minutes. So far we have one. We have two. So I will start 3. So I'll start with the first one. Is Felicity Figueroa. Okay, go ahead. You are muted. Felicity, you're muted.
Okay, great. Sorry.
There you are.
I got it. Perfect. Okay, well, good morning, everybody, and Happy New Year. Let's hope this one is improvement over the last two. I saw that our wonderful State Attorney General Rob Bonta would be in attendance today, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank AG Bonta for his support of the disaffiliation of Hoag Hospital from Provident Health Services, because this is a move that I'm convinced will be a positive one for both entities, allowing Hoag in particular to pursue the full realm of services for women, LGBTQ+ patients, and the senior members of our community. So AG Bonta, we really appreciate your principled stance on this matter. On a less suspicious note, I was disgusted to read the recently released report on the food conditions that exist in our Orange County jails. It's extremely disturbing to imagine that the poor people who are in the jails today are being forced to eat moldy, soggy bread, spoiled milk, and other abominations. Food conditions in Orange County jails have always been bad, but for almost 2 years, the Orange County Sheriff's Department has served cold, rotting bologna sandwiches for every meal. Yet the Board of Supervisors has ignored community calls to put the issue of food oppression in OC jails on their agenda. Since kitchen closure in March 2020 as a COVID precaution, the jail menu has consisted of 3 cold and extremely unhealthy bologna sandwiches a day. In 2019, a grand jury report found that hypertension, which can be caused or exacerbated by high levels of sodium, was a leading cause of unnecessary deaths in Orange County jails. Yet these bologna sandwiches are even higher in sodium than the previous hot meals were, packed with over twice as much as the recommended daily dose. Food is a central component of life in correctional institutions and plays a critical role in the physical and mental health of incarcerated people. OCSD continues to request high budgets while refusing to spend the savings to improve the quality of food in OC jails. So I urge this commission to request that the Board of Supervisors increase transparency around the OC budget and audit OCSD to ensure that its budget is being used for providing basic necessities like good quality food and beneficial programs to people in custody, instead of being siphoned off to staff salaries and benefits, and truly bizarre projects such as a laundry monorail for a jail that the community neither wants nor needs. That came up at the last Board of Supervisors meeting. Yes, this really exists. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Felicity, for making us aware of that. I wasn't aware that the situation was so grave in the prison system right now, in the jail system, and we'll have to check into that. I don't know if anyone else wanted to speak to that. I wasn't aware of that at all. So thank you.
Chair Matsuba, I would just like to say hi, Felicity. It's nice to hear your voice. And also, I echo your remarks about Hogue, and very excited and very thankful to Bonta for hearing our voices on that. And I just want to just lift up those comments.
Thank you. Anyone else? Our next.
And maybe if I unmute myself, that would help. Our next speaker is Pat Davis. So go ahead.
We are still in that unmuting thing, and I remembered because you hadn't. That's good. That's good. Thank you for the tip. Good morning, and yes, a happy new year. It's starting with a flurry at our house. They're destroying our kitchen to make it look better, so I may have some competition in the background. Certainly, congratulations on the presentation and award from the Board of Supervisors. Let's hope it keeps on coming and the monies are multiplied, because the kind of insight and reach that this group has through the leadership of Norma and her crew is just phenomenal, and something that will continue to make our county a better place and a safer place. And yes, I heard what Felicity was saying about the food in the jails, and there's a recent editorial by the LA Times board also referencing that atrocious setup in our jails. So I was pleased to see that. And again, the Attorney General coming, I'm sure they're many things in many counties, but our county, as Dot so eloquently covered, and Housing is Human Right, OC also did a reading of the names, and it was quite touching. But I do want to call attention to the sheer number of deaths and what's wrong with this county. What is going on? What are we not doing? Where are the services lacking? And as Dot knows, the numbers are underreported because they don't capture those who die in hospital or in shelter, or a family member comes to claim the body. So that number is much higher, and quite a sad note. And many of you may not know, but we are in this housing cycle, the regional housing needs assessment, housing element. And the Attorney General will in fact be partnering with Housing and Community Development to look at enforcement issues if cities are not taking these things seriously. So again, while you all have taken interest and are looking at the unhoused, think of what it would be like if our cities and the county would take seriously affordable housing. And we're not talking about all permanent supportive housing. We are talking about basic needs of both those who are unhoused and housing insecure, and we know that's getting worse. So again, congratulations on all you do, and I look forward to hearing the rest of the meeting. Thank you. Oh, also St. Benizia, I don't know, Dot may know, St. Benizia every second Tuesday does a memorial, and it's quite powerful, the reading of the names each month, and it just brings it all home. And then again, the year-end editorial and list of names that appear, thankfully, in the Voice of OC. The Register wanted $400 or something dollars to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you for always being here and being so supportive. We appreciate that.
Okay, our next speaker is David Duran. Go ahead.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'd certainly want to send congratulations. And again, thank you, Dot, for bringing light into the room. Along with what our earlier speakers had to say, if you follow the cause for a lot of what is going on here in Orange County against the unhoused or the neglect of the unhoused, there's an odd trail that seems to go back to the criminalization of poverty. We know that statistically about one of four or so, and that number I think maybe has grown, of those who are in jail are unhoused. And the idea that the county did not step forward to help to resolve and save Mary's Kitchen in the city of Orange, a place that feeds hundreds daily that are, you know, unhoused and hungry. This is how we recognize our leadership, is that they're absent. We need, and I've brought this to this room before at earlier times, we need to start making efforts. It'd be my recommendation to do something to help identify those who are unhoused, those who are suffering from poverty as a protected class. Not that that would give them special rights, but it would help to elevate the criminalized penalties for those who mistreat them, for those who do wrong things, even if it's law enforcement. And they're the only ones who, it's like the fox watching the hen house. They are the only ones who get to report the deaths, how they died, et cetera, et cetera. So what we don't know is, heaven forbid, what we don't know is if there's any, if there's not enough police oversight or law enforcement oversight, how do we know that maybe some of those people have not passed at the hands of law enforcement? It's a horrible thing to think of, but you know, we know that that happens when people are watching. So the food in the jail, Mary's Kitchen, the protected class, the numbers keep rising of the unhoused. And if you point a finger somewhere or recognize, I think the Board of Supervisors really needs to do a better job. I'm hoping with your guidance to educate them, to educate the public that this might happen one of these days before too many more deaths occur. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. And it's so true. And I think that with events like what the movie that Dot put together about The Longest Night, and just showing reverence to the people who have died on the street and letting them know we do care, we're here for them, and we're trying to make this situation better in Orange County, because it is really, you know, for us as one of the richest counties in this country, to have that type of a death rate for people living on the street is really sad and hard to take. So thank you, David, for bringing that to our attention.
Our next speaker is Karen Hernandez. Sorry, Karen Hernandez. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everybody, and Happy New Year. My name is Karen Hernandez. I am a coalition coordinator with Stop the Music, and I'm also an intern with an ACLU of Southern California. And I have contact with incarcerated folks. I am part of the group that worked on the report of cold, rotting and molding meals, which is food oppression in the Orange County jails. So I thank you very much for listening to us today, because as Felicity and Dave and Pat have mentioned as well, we have been trying to push for the Board of Supervisors to agendize this because we think it's a really, really important issue. Over the last 6 months that I've been answering the hotline from the ACLU, I would say 95% of the calls are regarding the food and how it just is not just physically killing people, but emotionally. Just imagine eating your own favorite food 3 times a day for almost 2 years. You couldn't do it. You know, it is almost just the very definition of torture. You know, along with that, I would be behooved to not mention that, you know, OCSD is shifting an average of over $50,000 per month away from food from incarcerated people into its general budget simply from closing the kitchen. And, you know, the cost-cutting measures that OCSD has taken around food services, I think are personally, fiscally short-sighted. Food costs are also dwarfed by healthcare costs in jail. So improving the nutritional quality of jail food would really be a cost-effective way to improve the health of incarcerated people. And along with the conditions of OC jails, they're reflective of a broader issue in Orange County is food insecurity and how it disproportionately affects Black and Brown people and the unhoused people. And those same communities are also disproportionately incarcerated. I also wanted to point that the LA Times put out an editorial today, and I'm just gonna read a couple of things from there. In regards to this report, it says, it doesn't matter whether you've ever set foot in jail or even the county for that matter. Unhealthy, spoiled and otherwise inadequate food in jails is inhumane and degrades not just the people who eat it. It is the public's responsibility to ensure the incarcerated people are not subject to this kind of mistreatment, which will have continuing health consequences. And it goes on to say that, you know, in Orange County, hot meals were suspended at the beginning of the pandemic for what the sheriff said were reasons of health and safety. You know, and also with that, you know, restaurant kitchens everywhere are open. So closing the kitchens is not the only way to follow COVID protocols. And it's just unfortunate that it remains their go-to solution. And just to wrap it up, I also wanted to say that, you know, society has a humanitarian and pragmatic interest in ensuring that people come out of being incarcerated in better condition than they were when they went in. Even if a jail stays to be brief, it should offer people food that is both healthful and palatable. Meals make it more likely that formerly incarcerated people will have diabetes, hypertension, and other costly illnesses associated with poor nutrition that do not serve us well. Poor health ensures that we will continue to be paying those costs of incarceration long after release in the form of hospital stays, medications, and lost opportunities for former incarcerated people to live productive lives that contribute to our communities. And even people convicted of the most despicable crimes who are locked up for the rest of their days, even not to be treated humanely. It's something that civilized societies do. It benefits people both inside the jails. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
And we do have one more speaker. It is Lulu Hamad. Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year. Thanks a lot for listening to us. And I'd like to start by thanking Commissioner Leach for bringing the issue of the longest night and our community members who passed away without fixable. And I'm basically just adding my voice to all the speakers who came earlier in saying that this issue of the housing crisis and people dying without fixable is not very far from what's going on also at the OC jails and the food crisis, the food oppression there. Many of our unhoused friends and community members are being criminalized for the crisis that they're going through and end up at those jails. And end up being served, I wouldn't even call it food, to be honest. It's something that's not fit for human consumption. So that's that's something of great concern to me. And again, like the speakers before me, I'd like to urge you to ask and urge the Board of Supervisors to look further into this and to ensure a few things, that A, the incarcerated population is actually getting decent, edible, nutritious food, because they deserve so, just by the virtue of being human beings, regardless of why they're there or not. And noting that many people are in jail because they're in pretrial, because they can't afford the bail bond. And also to ensure that the OCSD cannot profit from these injustices, cannot shift funds from funds that are allocated to food into their general, the general budget. And if any such funds were unused, that they should be sent back to the Board of Supervisors, because that's, that avoids the conflict of interest. And also something that really was extremely disconcerting to me is the what the Stop the Music report mentioned, how the deputies, even after the OCSD was ordered by the Board of State and State Corrections, the BSCC, to at least provide one hot meal per day, incarcerated people actually put, and the deputies, incarcerated people, sorry, reported that deputies would bring those quote unquote hot meals and put them by their cells and leave them there for an hour or so. And then until they're cold and they're infested with bugs, and then they would let the people in the jail eat them, which to me makes me think that cruelty is the point here. It's not just, you know, it's not just like incompetence. There's something more than incompetence. They're treating them with less dignity, less, they're dehumanizing them. And that's extremely, extremely troubling. The other issue, if I have a minute just to add, is that yesterday there was a report about Tatiana Turner, who was arrested in the aftermath of the Yorba Linda protests in 2020. And she's being charged again. After her, after the first charges were dismissed for violation of her rights. And the issue that is concerning me right now is that in that report, I heard that there were 120 deputies on the scene that day. And there was a total of 250, more or less, demonstrators, 30 of which were BLM, and the others were Proud Boys and Rise Above and other racist and problematic groups. And the report yesterday said that the deputies, who were fully armed in tactical gear, they had the motor strike unit there, they had a chopper, they were not able to quickly separate the crowds. I mean, I don't even know why they even let them get together in the first place, but they were not able to separate them, and they retreated and let the clashes continue. This is extremely, extremely disconcerting, again, because I remember very clearly Sheriff Barnes a few months before that, 2 months before that, standing before the Board of Supervisors asking for $15 million.
Ms. Hamad, your time has expired. If you could please wrap up your comments. Those
issues. Yeah, just to address those issues, and to have 120 deputies on the scene, not able to handle 250 protesters. Some of them said that they've already talked to the lieutenant there and coordinated with them that they will not do anything. This is very problematic, and I hope that you will be able to talk to the Board of Supervisors and have them investigate this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. O'Neill?
I would just like to say that one of the things that I do in my work is I work with veterans. And so I have spent many days going to the OC jail, because that's where I will meet them during their cases or for different reasons, just to go in and make sure they're okay. So I can attest to the fact there's some amazing people that work in the jail. So I really don't want us to put this umbrella over the jail system and everyone works there as if they're all criminals and all torturers. I have had many come out of the jail and still come see me, and I work with them. We talk about many facets of what takes place in the jail. And there is good and there is bad. So I really want us to be very cautious not to sort of throw this blanket over everyone who works in the jail. For sure, institutions do have issues and they definitely need to be addressed and worked through. And it's wonderful when we can bring those issues and then move that needle. But we again have to be very careful not to be demoralizing the hardworking people that also work in the jail that are not torturers and do their job.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Nguyen. Good points. Anyone else? All right. Jamie, can we move to the next item, please?
Yes. Item number four is Attorney General Rob Bonta visiting with the Human Relations Commission. And I think Norma has an announcement.
I do. Unfortunately, Attorney General Bonta's schedule drastically changed in the last 2 days and wasn't able to join us. However, staff member mentioned that they have saved our February meeting. So he will come back in February. Initially, he was going to take the call in a car, and then they said no. That's not going to be conducive of a good conversation. So they just opted for a reschedule. So he will be here in February. And while we're talking about that, I do want to add that there's two other speakers that have been lined up for March and April. So March, we have Seth Teagan with Providence Memorial Hospital. And in April, we have Enedina Kim with OC Register of Voters. And both of them were suggestions from Commissioner Leach. So we have three speakers lined up as we stand now. So please, if you have anybody that you'd like to invite to come speak, send them my way.
Great. Okay, thank you, Norma. All right, we'll move to the next item, please.
Item number five is review and reconsider state of emergency under AB 361 and make findings to continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of emergency arising from COVID-19 as required by government code subsection 54959E3.
So I just take a big sigh because I just really thought we were making our way out of this, but it looks like it's going to be with us for a little bit longer with the surge, with the Omicron. You know, as we all know, there's been pulling back in every area. So if we can have a discussion, if anyone wants to have a discussion about should we request that we continue to meet virtually.
I make a motion that we continue to meet virtually.
Well, that's wonderful, but the only thing is we're going to still have to meet, call a special meeting because of the time restraints. So we will, I'll just say for next Thursday, again, we'll meet at this time and have a very quick meeting just to, you know, so we can have a motion and we can move that time thing is really tricky. So it has to be within a certain amount of days that the decision is made. So we will send it out that we will meet again next week to make that decision.
Just a reminder that in order for that to happen, there needs to be a quorum.
So
a quorum is necessary next week in order for this to pass.
Okay. So do most people think they will be able to have about 5 to 10 minutes next week on a Thursday at the same times? Okay, we'll be looking for all your smiling faces. And thank you, Commissioner Briceño, for, you know, getting it rolling, but we do have to meet again. All right, thank you.
And we need a second to this motion and then we can vote on it.
Oh,
okay. I second. Two dots.
All right, and then I will do the roll call vote. Okay, Commissioner Briceño?
Yes.
Commissioner Buck, Commissioner Dobie.
Yes.
Commissioner Faruqi, Commissioner Kent.
Yes.
Commissioner Leach.
Yes.
Commissioner Lee.
One thing, yes. You know, as the board, there are things you need to know.
Commissioner Matsuba.
Yes.
Commissioner O'Neill.
Yes.
Commissioner Steinberg.
Yes.
And Commissioner Wang.
Yes.
Okay, it does pass. Okay.
Great, thanks. All right, moving to our next item.
Item number 6 is HRC bylaws revision update.
Okay, so at this point, we've come to the time that we do want to review the bylaws of the HRC, kind of discuss what's in place, see if there's anything that needs to be added, updated, removed, whatever. We need to just go over the bylaws and see where we stand. Rabbi Rick was one of the people on the ad hoc, and also who was our last chair,
Michael Reynolds.
Michael Reynolds, yeah, thank you, was one of the members. So at this point, we only have on the committee Rabbi Rick. So we are looking for volunteers to be a part of that ad hoc. And yes, Dot?
I was going to say, actually, Fareed appointed me at the last thing he did at his last meeting.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry.
And I have spoken with Rabbi Rick.
Okay, so sorry, that. I didn't realize that.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
We have Commissioner Leach and Commissioner Steinberg. And then if anyone else would like to be a part of that process, Commissioner Briseño is raising your hand to be a part of that.
Could you just give me an overview of what it's about?
Norma, you want to elaborate on it, or?
A couple years back, there was an ad hoc that was formed to review the bylaws for the commission and offer some updates and then also offer some changes. So, the bylaws hadn't been changed in a while, and there's a redline copy that exists, but it hasn't been reviewed in a while. And I know that at least in conversation with the commission chair, she was interested in kind of bringing that back. So we have so many new commissioners and not everybody knows what those revisions are. So creating or bringing back the ad hoc to review that, look at it, and then maybe make more suggestions, thought it would be ideal. So it really is to look at the last copy that was worked on, and then kind of work with Renee's team for any changes that might be submitted whenever they get submitted for approval with the Board of Supervisors.
Okay, thanks.
And Chairwoman, we can only have 4
right.
Folks on the ad hoc. So at this point, I have Commissioner Steinberg, Leach, Briseño. Are you adding yourself on here, Chairwoman, or?
If no one else is interested.
I'm just trying to keep track.
Yeah, the number. I would, Commissioner O'Neill, are you interested in being a part of this?
Yes.
Okay, so that would be make our 4 then.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks. And you will be hearing from someone from the county. They're trying to get a date together. I know, a list of possible dates have been sent out, but we'll do that again and see when everyone can make a meeting. We're probably within a week or 2 at the most. Yeah. All right, thank you. All right, our next item.
Item number 7 is Commission staff reports, anti-hate expansion work update, and LBUSD hate activity incidents report.
Thanks, Jamie. So I'll be sharing my screen. I did prepare a PowerPoint for this, trying to be fancy. So I'm gonna use this here. Can everybody see that?
Yes. Yes.
Right. So as I mentioned earlier, the commission proposal for $1 million was approved in December. And with this presentation, I know that there's the ad hoc that worked on it, and it's very familiar with what this means, what the contents are. And there's a bulk of the commissioners that have been running on faith and support, but don't have much information. And I thought it'd be important to share that with everybody today. So in general, there was a unanimous votes to approve this December 14th last year. The contract amount is for $1 million and the contract is for 12 months. There are three umbrellas of areas of expansion that were the commission ad hoc was had proposed and were working on. First, it was the improvement of the database for data collection and accessibility. And I'll go into what those mean further in the presentation. Number two was to improve the victim service and support that we offer. And number three is to launch a diverse educational marketing campaign. So when we look at number one, the database, improving database data collection accessibility, there's two things that are going to happen. One is we're going to launch a new online portal that is connected to a database that will allow us to collect better information, share better data. And not only that, but also help us to do a better job when putting together our hate crime report. So it'll ease some of the time that goes into just working on Excel spreadsheet. So there's different elements of that. And then the second one is the call center. So currently we have a hotline. The hotline is through OC Human Relations Council's phone lines. For this one, we're actually partnering with 211 OC. They already have a call center on site, people who are trained. We will be training those folks on hate activity intakes, but they have the infrastructure. And this allows us to improve and increase the accessibility. So what this means is folks will be, if they have a language need, a cultural need that needs to be met, 211 is going to be able to offer that. Same with our online reporting portal. Currently, we have English, we have traditional Chinese and Vietnamese form. The form has been translated in those languages. For this one, one of the contract requirements is to make sure that our forms and our services accessible in the 7 threshold languages for Orange County. And I'll share a little bit of what that means. So that means that we have a higher language accessibility for more communities to be able to get connected and that are able to report. And of course, partnering with 211 means we have more access to resources where we're able to refer folks to. So as I mentioned, the online reporting, there will be three ways where folks will be able to report. There will be the online portal, they can call the hotline, and also there's going to be a text to report option. And that is intuitive, it's automated, and it will always lead to a live person if someone wants to connect with someone for resources. The people will be able to report and get support in Spanish, Korean, Vietnamese, Chinese, Cantonese, Mandarin, Persian, and that's Dari and Farsi, Japanese, and Tagalog. I always have a lot. Sorry, I have a hard time saying that last one. And the purpose, the other thing is making sure that we're expanding access to services in a holistic and comprehensive manner for everyone. So this is regardless of whether they're hate crime victim or a hate incidents victim. So number two, improving the victim service and support. The other part that the commission ad hoc proposed was to ensure that we developed a comprehensive wraparound service aspect to this. So we will be creating the wraparound services network. What this means is we have to partner with 6 community-based organizations that will be able to provide services to those who need and request support because they have been a victim of hate, regardless of if it's an incident or if it's a crime. Each of the CBOs will receive $50,000 for 12 months that they will have to bill for us monthly to ensure that they have someone who focuses specifically to this project. And that is not only taking care of the referrals and working with folks, but also being active in our hate crime prevention network and our steering committee. So they have to do outreach as well, help us with the outreach aspect of this work, and then also be part of the feedback loop in being able to build some of the assets that will fit the needs of the communities that they serve. Of course, this means that we're expanding direct service accessibility to all hate victims, including the 7 threshold languages, and in partnering with the 6 orgs, we're hoping that we're able to elevate the marketing campaign outreach aspect. Currently, we have been able to identify 4 of the 6. We have till the end of the month. We're working hard on that, but 211 they're part of the network, but they're not part of the 6 because they're already working on our database and call center. So they're sort of the umbrella connected. But the 4 orgs that have come on board is the LGBTQ Center of OC, Korean Community Services, Waymakers, and the Green Foundation. And we're working on 2 others that hopefully we'll have more answers by next week. And what this means, just some of the examples of services that we're talking about in terms of this aspect or this expansion is being able to offer crisis intervention, advocacy for medical or other types of needs, mental health services, support groups, case management, and of course the in-language support that folks need. The 3rd aspect of the expansion is the marketing campaign. And it really is to focusing on improving the community's understanding and engagement addressing hate and bias in Orange County. What this means is we're looking on developing a comprehensive campaign that is multilingual, that is able to be multiculturally based, and then, you know, it has those diverse marketing strategies, including the languages. And then in building this, there's 3 core groups that we have to develop who will provide feedback and who'll be able to help us vet the content to make sure that it's adequate for the specific communities that we're targeting. So as mentioned, the campaign essentials commission ad hoc was clear that they wanted this to be a diverse marketing strategy to include the BIPOC community, the LGBTQ, and the interfaith community. And that we will include community feedback groups, meaning there will be three different groups we'll always come back to, and including community forums to really get the okay that the messaging, the collateral is on target. Just quickly, some of the things that we'll be doing to report and evaluate. We will have monthly reports from our community-based organizations. They'll have to tell us the number of referrals they received, the number of those that were resolved, and then of course, doing client satisfaction. The role for our database, like we do now, we have to keep track of the number of reports that we receive. Now it's going to be tracked by what comes through our online portal, the hotline, the call center, and the text to report response time, the wait time, the number of referrals made, and languages accessed. From our different forums and committees that we will be holding, we'll have to report back on attendance, media contacts that we make for the marketing pieces, and then similar to the To Know Better campaign, some of the data that comes back from how do our PSAs and our marketing tools, how do they, how well was it received in social media and stuff like that. And of course, we have Ted Knapp, who you'll see in this room today, who is our liaison for this contract. And we will be checking in with him bi-weekly to make sure that we're keeping on track with our timeline and our milestones. Just other updates, things that are happening now. We are hiring three people to help us to fulfill these contract obligations. We'll be interviewing folks next week, hoping that we will get them here ASAP. because number two, I am splitting my time between both of our contracts now. So the first contract is the 252 that staffs the commission. I will be 70% in that contract, and I am 30% in the new one. So I'm able to lead and support the staff that will be working on the expansion. But all of that to say that this is an expansion of our current work. So there definitely will be collaboration and support from our current staff with the new staff, because knowledge and everything this with my current staff and the strategy has to be bigger than these two different groups. We will be working close together through this process. Just some of the things at the end of January, I'm hoping that we'll have our six CBOs identifying on board, the database design complete with 211 before it goes for county approval, made offers or hired folks who will join us soon. And then we will be announcing this expansion to the Hate Crime Prevention Network Friday. Because the Hate Crime Prevention Network is a key element for the growth and expansion of this, especially the stakeholder input aspect. Questions? And I'll stop sharing.
I just want to say you did a great job. That was a very nice PowerPoint, Norma.
Yeah, thank you.
Are you stepping in, or are you going to use the hand?
Okay. Chair Matsuba, you are muted.
Sorry about that. Yes, thank you so much, Norma. I was just saying that was a beautiful presentation and really broke it down to show what we plan on doing and how we're going to move forward. Thank you. That was great. And I see some hands up. So
Commissioner Wayne.
Jennifer, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Norma, can you actually go back to the threshold language? Can you name them again? I think I missed that part. What threshold language are you covering?
The languages.
We have, I don't know by, okay. Spanish, Korean, Vietnamese, Chinese, or which is Cantonese or Mandarin, Persian and Japanese.
Is there a reason why it's Japanese? I'm actually taken aback because I think it's supposed to be Arabic.
That's interesting. I'll have to go back. That's what I pulled from our contracts, but I will have to go back and check.
Okay, yeah, because I think Persian, I heard Tagalog too, right? So I was taken aback by that. Not to take away those languages. I just want to make sure that Arabic, which is one of the threshold languages for Orange County, is included.
Yeah, we have Dari and Farsi for now in the Persian category. I will have to go back and check on that one.
Okay, because my knowledge is it's English, Spanish, Vietnamese, Farsi, Korean, Chinese, and Arabic. Those are the seven.
All right.
In Orange County.
Commissioner Briseño?
Norma, I just want to say that I'm inspired for 2022 and the work that we're going to do. And just say that I know some of those organizations that have been granted already. So I'm excited. I'm excited for that. And I just want to let folks know that I have to get off the Zoom. I just wanted to say goodbye, but I'll see you next week. It's exciting to see how we're expanding. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ada.
Commissioner Leach?
Lee or Leach? Leach? Okay. Leach. I had a question. Do you mind repeat? Two questions. One, do you mind repeating what you said was one of the CBOs? It was right before the Green Foundation.
Waymakers OC.
I'm sorry?
Waymakers OC.
Okay, Waymakers. And then my other question, and I'm not familiar with that one, but I'm wondering, is there a CBO being contacted perhaps or sought that can deal with basically, for lack of a better word, ageism in some of the problems? I'm recalling that early on in COVID, some of the people that were being attacked physically were elderly Asian people in different communities. So I'm wondering if a CBO is connected with that, or if you are leaving it to these other CBOs to be the umbrella for that community of folks.
Yes. we are going to leave it to the CBOs. This particular aspect of the expansion has been very challenging, mm-hmm. Which is why it's taken this long to even get four organizations on board. Mm-hmm. And it's really looking closely at how we're cutting the issue. You know, there's so many different ways that we can look at the asks from the county and the community, and then what our data tells us. We understand that this expansion came from what we saw during the pandemic and the rise of hate against the Asian American community. But we also understand and looking at the data that there's other communities that, you know, have been targeted for a very long time. And having to balance these with only six CBOs with this money, it's been really challenging to figure out, okay, how do we make sure that we fulfill our language threshold requirements with responding to the community needs, the trends? And those are the two areas that we have two more spots. And we're being really challenged in trying to figure out how do we fill those in a manner that's going to respond to what we need to do to also respond to the community.
No, I appreciate that, and that makes sense. So thank you for that, and an excellent PowerPoint.
Thank you. Rabbi.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I don't ever say this, but I'll say it here. As the longest serving commissioner in county history, just this group of people here, this is so exciting, A, and B, this is our moment. I don't know. I think I've been on the commission maybe 10 years or so. And, you know, there are points at our tenure that they wanted to get rid of the commission and defund it completely. So this is really, sadly, our moment in the sense that the need is there and we are responding and the county is responding. So applause to the Board of Supervisors, first of all, for seeing the need and for our team for providing a response to that need. And so, Norma, to you and to your staff and to your new staff, we got to get up and running because it's not guaranteed that this will be on December 14th of 2022 renewed in a significant way unless we prove that we are responding to the needs that are out there. So to the extent I, and I hope I speak for all of our commissioners, can help the staff do that, please let us know. Don't be afraid to use us. That's why we're here. This is our moment, and I just want us to seize it to prove that we can make an impact that is significant and real and worth at least $1 million of county money to make our county a better and more tolerant place for people to live.
So important.
Commissioner Wayne.
Norma, can you elaborate on the four orgs that you have secured right now in terms of what they each do and what they would cover? Just could you elaborate a little more?
As I reviewed the different services that they're offering here, crisis intervention, mental health services, case management. So they all have direct service support embedded in their business.
But they should all have their own niche, right? Like their specialty. What would they be covering?
All of them offer what I'm saying. So the organizations that are currently part that have signed up offer mental health services for the communities that they serve. They offer advocacy and case management, crisis intervention. There's actually KCS does also health. They do a lot of health support for the Korean community and others. And I think the only other Waymakers and LGBT Center offer support groups for their clients.
Can you elaborate on Waymakers? What's their, like, for example, KCS, I assume it's Korean, right? So then
Waymakers actually offers for everybody. Right now the languages that they're able to support are Spanish, English, and Vietnamese.
Oh, okay, so includes Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. And then how about the Green Foundation?
That's an African-American based organization in Orange County that works with pastures across the county and does what I mentioned.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. Commissioner O'Neill.
So Jennifer, I would recommend that you do what I did. I wrote the names down. I'm gonna go onto their websites and I'm going to look at, you know, who they are and what they do in more detail. So I think that might help Norma trying to recite what each of them do in a tidbit, but that would be actually a good idea if you really wanted, you know, to elaborate on them. But I wanted to ask Norma, how do you find these organizations? Because if we know of organizations that might be a good fit, is there a criteria?
So I want to say that the grand majority of those that we approached, we have been working with for years. Half of what we've recruited have been part of the hate crime prevention network since inception. So it was pretty clear cut for us that they've committed and they've been part of this process without any compensation. We know that they're passionate about the work. They know what it is. We felt it was natural to be able to approach them. Some others were recommended from the different stakeholders that we've spoken to and worked with throughout the year. And one of them actually came from a referral. As I mentioned earlier, we know it historically that the Black community in Orange County has been number one hate crime victim and targeted through, you know, year in and year out. And we understood that it was a community we needed to approach. So internally, I went to my colleagues at OCQ Motions Council to talk about who are we able to partner, who's out there that's doing the direct service, but is connected to the interfaith community. Because we know that that's a huge connection for the African-American Black community, and Green Foundation came to the top. So if right now, just to be transparent, we're being challenged with being able to partner with an organization that can offer this type of support for victims in Chinese. Whether the cultural aspect and that language aspect. And then Arabic is the one that we have meetings lined up for tomorrow. See who we're able to bring on board. So we have two more organizations we're working with and talking to, offering, sharing what this is. And then hopefully by next week, we might have filled those spots. But if you have any suggestions, we can connect offline. I'm open to that. I heavily relied on stakeholders. Commissioner Wang has been someone of a sounding board in this process with other folks, Commissioner Buck. So if anybody has any ideas, let me know. I'm open.
Thank you.
That's great.
That is all I have in terms of the expansion. I hope that, you know, every month this will probably be a standing agenda item under our commission updates, just so commissioners are aware of what's happening. The other item that I have was last month before the holidays, there was an op-ed written from the Laguna Beach community. And then it was actually sent to us through our online reporting portal. There was reports of anti-Semitism at a Laguna Beach High School area. And it wasn't a particular individual, but there was several hate incidents reported in one whim. So what we did and what I've done is I reached out, sent letters to the superintendent, to the school's principal, just offering support, sharing who we are and the resources that we can provide to be able to support the community in trying to navigate this. It seems like the school and the district have responded. The parents aren't too happy about it. And that's how these op-ed and reports have come up. So I wanted to share that that's happening. We've reached out. If any of you heard about it, we're keeping an eye out on the situation. There's a couple of different things that are not here, but I did email everybody that there is a dialogue next week, next Tuesday. If you're able to join us, please do so. it's really going to launch the idea, the series of relationship building and racial healing. And then keep an eye out for more information and an actual formal invitation to the film screening that me reported on a couple months back. So just kind of a heads up that these invitations are going to be hitting your inbox. And if you're able to join us, please do so. That's all I have.
Great. All right. Thank you, Norma. Thanks so much. The presentation was really good and on point. Thank you.
Chief Kent, I believe, has something to say.
Oh, yes, Mr. Kent.
Thank you, and thank you, Chair. Just a quick comment on Norma's presentation. Norma, thank you. That was a great presentation. I just want to say that I couldn't agree more that now, probably more than ever, it's definitely crucial and important for us to expand our awareness and outreach when it comes to hate incidents and crimes out there. I'll tell you, just from our own experience here at the police department, by expanding some of the resources and outreach that we have and present to our community, that we did back in April, we created a portal that's available in several different languages. We have definitely seen an uptick in the reporting, not necessarily in hate crimes occurring, but people that were not willing to come forward before now are willing to come forward, because part of the option via the portal is you can also report it as a third party and you could be anonymous. And for us, obviously we do want to know about these. We want to be able to track them. And if there's, you know, any type of enforceable action for us to take, we definitely want to do that. But, you know, I think what's important is for our community to know that it is very important for the police department to hear about these incidents and for us to take an opportunity and seize these opportunities to show that the community that we care for them, but also to take action as needed. So anything I can do or our department can do to be helpful with this process, as well as we continue to expand our outreach, please count on us to be a helpful partner as well. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you. All right. I'm going to move on.
Okay. Chief, the question is for you. When there's a hate call that goes out on the dispatch, am I correct that a sergeant or higher responds, that it's not just the patrol officer that responds? Or am I making that up and incorrectly?
No, you're right, Rabbi. When we do have some sort of a hate, either incident or crime that comes out over the radio that's reported, at the very minimum, we'll have a supervisor attached to the call for service and respond and see what kind of actions we need to be taking, not just from a criminal investigation standpoint, from a resource, to be able to put the victim in touch with the right resources as well. So it's something we take very seriously here in the city, and not that we don't take other crimes seriously, of course we do, but we understand the dynamics of how that impacts not just one person, but the whole community, especially if it's from that specific community that's feeling targeted. So yes, we do things a little bit different than other agencies. Again, I'm not necessarily saying we're doing it better or worse, but for us, it's really important to make sure that a supervisor is attached to the call to make sure that we're reporting it up the chain of command as far as what's happening, for us to be able to make the proper notifications as need be, but more importantly, to be able to provide the proper resources to those that are impacted. So thanks for the question, Rabbi.
Awesome. Thank you for that explanation.
All right.
These forms is just COVID and go through what was happening right now. We're trying to stay healthy and treat those folks out there that are providing police services. In regards to specific issues, ongoing issues, one thing I did talk about, you'll see about this panels, whatever the community gatherings that were, I think more than ever, we have to seek these opportunities to engage with the community and make sure that we're continuing to build on that foundation and the trust that the community has in us and not just as a city, but also as a profession. So I know different chiefs have different ideas with kind of what they're looking to do within their communities, but that's one of the bigger topics of conversation right now with what's going on with us. So nothing else to report. Thank you.
I actually don't have an announcement. I have a question. When it comes to these sessions and we have our attendees here, are the attendees actually able to interact with us when, for example, Norma's making a report or presenting? Or is it just during open forum?
I believe just during open forum.
Okay, that's what I thought. So then is there rules or protocol when it comes to, for example, the attendees that are here listening, they message us and they're asking questions?
I think we had this question a couple of months ago when we said that there wouldn't be responses. I think we had quite a big dialogue on that about that going back and forth and having opinions on it, that we were really listening to them. Is that not correct? We had that conversation, is that correct?
I think it's a different question. Are you asking?
Yeah, a place, because I feel like it is my place to handle them. I just want clarification on that. Because my two questions were not always based off people messaging me, actually.
I think commissioners wanted to follow up information and or to get more details and to research maybe the topic a little more. That was a specific question. Is that allowable? And I think overall the answer was, technically, it's because it's a particular subject matter. I think when it comes to this, I'm going to ask Amy just to chime in, but if she can, this is more of a procedural Brown Act meeting question. So there is a public forum where they can chime in, yes, specific to they're emailing you. I think they should be contacting them directly if they have questions in regards to what the county contract says. That's a public record. If they want to get recommend, maybe they were part of the stakeholder meetings.
I do want to
say, yes. Based on the Brown Act, is there anything else you want to add or clarify or correct?
Yeah, maybe questions you can direct to Mona, but it's up to you.
So I just want to add, you know, for commissioners and for those who are listening, as we are going back to the model that was launched last April, I know that there was a series of stakeholder input meetings. We are going to put some of those in that process so we're able to share with folks about, you know, do this on a weekly basis, but we will build that in into the process.
Thank you. Dr. Yes. Has her hand up.
Yes.
My question, I have a question, not a comment as well. We haven't mentioned it today because we haven't had an opportunity to, but can we receive some clarification now that there are new districts out there and we may be in a district where the supervisor that appointed us is no longer our the supervisor before?
Renee, I'm going to direct this to you.
I think Jamie can take the lead on this one.
Yeah, there aren't any residence requirements for your team, if they're turned out to reappoint you or not. But like I said, there are no residence requirements. So if you don't fall in the district anymore, and if the district supervisor, whoever that's going to be, because we do know the part that is turned out, can reappoint you if they so choose. You don't have to live in their district anymore.
Okay. So, Jamie, while you're still there, so the immediacy of the district changes.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I go from Bartlett to Wagner as far as where I live.
Okay.
I don't know who else is Wagner.
Dr. O'Neill is.
Okay. So that does not affect anything you're saying as far as he now has two commissioners within his new district.
No, you are still a fifth district appointee. Okay. And that is how you will stay until your term is up. And then it's up to the next supervisor with the audio.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Okay. Anyone anything else to add? A pretty strong first meeting for the year. And last item is adjourned, correct? Are we there?
We are correct, yes.
Well, if there's nothing else, I would like to officially adjourn the meeting. It's 12:28.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone.
Thank you very much. Okay.